Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsum a day for the 14th of Av. Thank you for joining us. Today's responsum is the Chatam Sofer in part one, Orach Chaim, Siman Kuf Nun Zayin. And it was made, he wrote it on the 14th of Av of Tav Kuf Ayin Aleph, which is 1811. And he says that on Tisha B'Av Tav Kuf Ayin Aleph, he wasn't feeling well, and he was required to drink. He needed to drink over the course of the day. And then he thought about whether or not when he went to Mincha with the students who would daven in the Beit HaMidrash Shebebeiti. Interesting reminder that in those times, you'd have your own Beit Midrash in the house if you were a Rav of a Shul, if you were a big Rosh Yeshiva, if you were an important person, or whatever it was. But he had a Beit Midrash in the house. They would come for Mincha. And if they called me for an Aliyah in Mincha, Vayachal, so what would he do? Would he say, I can't take the Aliyah because I'm not fasting anymore? There is this assumption that people who aren't fasting shouldn't get Aliyot at Mincha. And he says, should I have to do that or not? So he says, he thinks that it's obvious that he would have been allowed to take the Aliyah like any other person there. Because he says, he thinks, once he thought about it, the whole idea that we have that if you're not fasting, you can't get an Aliyah, he says it's not actually explicit anywhere. There's no Gemara that says it. There's no Halacha in Shulchan Aruch that says it. And he says that he thinks that if you think about it logically, the Svara, the logical way to think it through, goes the other way, that anybody can go up and get an Aliyah because it's the community that's obligated to read this reading. And so the person, regardless of whether they're fasting or not, is helping the community fulfill their obligation. And the Bach had said that about Torah reading in general in Shulchan Aruch. So he said he would have thought that way about it. The only problem is that the Beis Yosef had written in Tav Kuf Samech Vav that from the Maharik, there was a tshuva in the Maharik that said that a Kohen who's not fasting shouldn't go and get an aliyah during Bet Hey Bet after Pesach. So, a little background, a little reminder that there was a tradition to fast three fast days after each one of the regalim. That as soon as one is able to, you couldn't do it in the month of Nisan because the whole month is a month of celebrations. We don't fast, but early in Iyar, the tradition was to have a fast a Monday and a Thursday and a Monday, to fast three times. I think it's because we're worried that maybe over the course of celebrating the holiday, we will have done something that wasn't appropriate or we would have misbehaved in some way. So we have these three fast days. They're called Bahab, Bet Hey Bet, fast days of Bahab. So the Beis Yosef had quoted Maharik who said that if there's a fast day of Bahab and they're reading the Torah, that a Kohen who's not fasting should not accept an Aliyah, should not accept the first Aliyah on the fast day. If you extrapolate from that and assume that that's the truth about any fast day, that the point is that you're not allowed to take an Aliyah on a fast day if you yourself are not fasting, that would be what people assume the halacha is. And this would be the source of this halacha that everybody assumed. But he's going to look into it further. He says, if you look at the Maharik carefully, the Maharik says, "Shinahagu b'chol kilot zarfat lehitanot bet hei bet achar Pesach v'sukkot." All of the French communities, which we would today think of as basically the Ashkenazi communities, had the custom to fast Behab, to fast a Monday, Thursday, and a Monday after Pesach and after Sukkot. And if there's a Kohen who's not mitaneh, who's not fasting be'otam ta'aniyot, who's not fasting those fast days, he's not accepting the custom of Bahab. So notice, first of all, that in the Marik's time, it was a well-accepted custom. It was everybody basically did it. And if this person is out of the ordinary, not fasting, so he doesn't just say he can't get an aliyah. He says, Yetzeh mi beit haKnesset. He says he should leave the shul so that there's no possibility he can get the aliyah. And he adds, "V'lo ra'iti kohen mifakfek padavar me'olam." I've never seen a kohen who says, no, I don't want to leave the Beit Knesset. I want to read the Torah. I want to get my Aliyah. And clearly, he says, if a Kohen had the right to say that he doesn't want to be forced to leave and he wants to get the Aliyah, then he would have done so. So he says it's got to be that it's not that way and that the honor of the community requires them to leave rather than stay and insist on getting their Aliyah. So that's what the Maharik says. The Chatam Sofer says that if the Beit Yosef are going to prove from that anybody who's not fasting shouldn't get an aliyah in general, it's kind of an odd thing to prove from there, if that's what he was trying to prove. Because The Maharik hadn't just said that he shouldn't take the Aliyah. He had said that he should leave the room. And when he was trying to think about what the man might have said, that the Kohanim never did, but if a Kohen wanted to be churlish, if a Kohen wanted to cause problems, what it was the Kohen could theoretically have done to cause the problems, what he says is, you never see the Kohen who says, I'm not going to leave, rather I'm going to read the Torah. So what do you mean he's going to read the Torah? He can't go read the Torah for Vayechal, says the Chatam Sofer, because that's the Torah reading for a fast day, and he's not fasting. So he says, if it weren't for the Beit Yosef, he would have thought that the truth is you learn the exact opposite lesson from there. That even somebody who's not fasting can get an Aliyah. But what the Maharik was trying to say was that we no longer have the obligation to honor a Kohen with the first Aliyah. Let's remember that we honor a Kohen with the first Aliyah because of a pasuk in the Torah that says Vikidashto, that we are supposed to treat Kohanim as having extra sanctity by virtue of their role in the Beit HaMikdash. And so we honor them by helping, letting them do things first. They would have the first rights to lead benching in a mezumen. They would get the first Aliyah and things like that. So the Chatam Sofer says, I would think the Maharik's point was that since he's not fasting with us, we have no obligation to honor him with the first Aliyah. He's not part of our corporate body that is fasting this fast day. And so why should he get to bed to read the Torah first? And so too, if there were three people who were eating, obviously the eating doesn't happen on the fast day, but the whole idea is we have to honor them with the leading of the benching. He says there too, we only have to honor the Kohen with leading the benching if the Kohen is part of the group. But if you had three ordinary Jews who were eating together, and a Kohen was eating somewhere off, there'd be no obligation to call the Kohen over and have him lead the benching. So too here, he says, when the Kohen isn't part of the fast day with the Jews of that community, then there's no reason why to think that the people fasting have to give him, this Kohen, the honor of getting the first Aliyah. So why does he have to leave? He only has to leave because, first off, there's always a worry that if you have a Kohen in the room and you don't give him an Aliyah, Chazal were always worried, Jewish tradition was always worried that people would draw the wrong conclusion, meaning in this case, if he stayed in the room and he didn't get the Aliyah, that would be because other people in the room are fasting. This Torah reading of Vayechal is the Torah reading for a fast day. So since he's not part of the fast, we don't need to give him the first Aliyah. That's the truth of what's going on. But Chazal were always worried that people would say, oh, there must be some problem with his status as a Kohen. And if there's some problem with his status as a Kohen, that could lead to other ramifications down the road. So they didn't want to get that in his impression, so they had him leave the room so it wouldn't be a problem. In addition to which, he always worried that there was going to be fighting that went on. Meaning, maybe if he stayed in the room, he would say, no, you should give me the first Aliyah anyway, and there would be a fight, there would be this. And he notices that the Maharik wrote carefully. He thinks Maharik was being careful when he wrote this and making sure to make an important point that if the Kohen says, I won't go out, it sounds like he has the ability and the right to insist on not going out, to staying in. Whereas according to the Beit Yosef, there's no reason for him to stay in or go out. All he has, he can't get an Aliyah. Whereas the Maharik is saying he could choose to not go out, but we prefer that he go out, not to create any problems. And not only that, the Chatam Sofer says that while it's true that in the Torah reading of Vayechal, he has no place and he can't be part of that Torah reading, Chatam Sofer thinks that the Kohen might be able to say, I'm not going out. And you know what? Read this week's Parsha, and I'll read that as Kohen as I'm supposed to. And therefore, you might get the conclusion that, in fact, the Kohen can't go up when he's being not fasting if the Torah reading is the fast day reading. So that wouldn't help the Chatam Sofer very much, because that would mean that if it was Tisha B'Av and they're reading a fast day reading, he wouldn't be able to get an Aliyah. But along the way, he sort of assumed, though he doesn't talk about when he's talking about it, meaning this is this fast day, this Baham, he's obviously on a Monday or a Thursday. But if it's Mincha time that we're talking about, well, Mincha time, there's not usually a Torah reading, so it's odd for him to say that the Kohen would be able to say, read the Parashat HaShavua. I think what he means is that even in the morning, the Kohen is already not fasting in the morning because he's just not part of Baham, so he's not fasting, although that's an interesting assumption to make because I think we generally assume that one, he doesn't bring this up, the Chatam Sofer, but we generally assume that one is supposed to not eat before tefillah, before davening. So if somebody's not supposed to be eating, then at Shacharit, at least you'd think that even if a Kohen doesn't intend to be part of the fast, he is currently not eating, he is currently fasting, and you might have thought that that would have been good enough. So whatever the case is, the Chatam Sofer is assuming that maybe the Kohen would have been allowed, would have been able to say, listen, don't read Vayakal, read the Parshat HaShavua, and I can read that, get the first Aliyah. And you know, so that's what the Merik is telling you, that we want to get to these problems. Since he's not fasting, we have him go out, and he always, and in his experience, Kohanim always agree to go out, and they do that, and that's what they do. So that's how he's read the Maharik so far. V'adayin ani omer, the Chatam Sofer says, that when the Maharik and the Beit Yosef were talking about it, they only meant to speak about it in terms of Bet Hebet, right? In terms of those fasts. So Bet Hebet is this fast day that came about much after the Gemara, it seems, and it's not an established communal fast. It's a bunch of individuals who have decided that following a major holiday, there's value in fasting for whatever reason. But it has been established as a communal fast. If you have enough people doing it, they'll be able to pray as a community fasting, but that's because it's a bunch of individuals who've chosen to fast. But that means, then he says, that anybody who's not fasting for whatever reason, it's not a fast day for that person. Meaning, come a Bahab, let's say. Next year, the next time there's a Bahab, let's suppose one of us is not fasting on Bahab. For that person, it's not a fast day. It's not that the person has a fast day and is not involved in the fast or is not partaking of the fast. It's not a fast day at all. So it's not a fast day at all. Then it would be questionable as to whether the person who's not fasting can be involved in the Torah reading to fulfill an obligation to the others. Meaning, the Chatam Sofer is saying that those people who accept Bet Hebet have turned it into a fast day. On a fast day for them, the reading of Vayichal is the appropriate Torah reading. But if somebody not fasting goes up and reads it, for that person it's not a fast day at all. Right? So then they can't do it because they're not part of this observance. But that's not the case in the case of Tisha B'Av when somebody is not feeling well. So he says there's two important and significant differences. One is that while the Chole doesn't have to fast because the Chole is ill and therefore needs to eat, it doesn't mean it's not a fast day for that person, right? It's not that it's not a fast day. It is a fast day. It's just a fast day that some parts of it, this chola is not allowed to keep. So he points out something to remember, at least in terms of Tisha B'Av, that when somebody is ill and we say they can violate the fast, the Chasam Sofer takes it for granted that that only extends as far as the person needs it for in order to live, in order to be okay. Meaning, if the only problem for this particular chola, for this particular ill person, was dehydration, that as long as that person could drink and not get dehydrated, and that's the only danger there is, then that person is not allowed to eat. Meaning, I think a lot of people think to themselves, well, it's a fast day. What a fast day means is, I don't eat or drink the whole day. And then they think, well, if for some reason I have to break it, well, it's just gone. And the Chatam Sofer does not agree with that at all. The Chatam Sofer explicitly is assuming the opposite is true. That if it's a fast day, it obligates the person, even if they've had to break it, they're only allowed to break it to the extent that they break it. That they need to, that they're required to. So if drinking would be good enough, then they shouldn't eat. And if eating is required, then it's only eating as much as is necessary. And also, on Tisha B'Av especially, this would be true for Yom Kippur as well, there are other inuyim, there are other expressions of the fast day, right? There's rechitza and tzicha, there's anointing oneself in oil, there's washing, there's wearing leather shoes, or shoes in general. So all of those, Chatzim Sofer says, are still in play even for a person who is ill enough that they had to eat and drink, unless there's some particular reason they need to do those things as well. But to the extent that they don't need those things, then they're required to follow theirs as well. How does that help us with the laning question? So before we get there, he says that's one point. So one point is that it's not true in the same way that an ill person is excluded from the fast the same way as somebody who's not keeping Bet Hebet. Somebody who's not keeping Bet Hebet, and that's their right. It's not a criticism of them, they're not keeping it, but if they're not keeping Bet Hebet, then they're not a part of that fast day, and then they cannot read the Vayichal Torah reading on behalf of the community. But somebody who's ill is part of the fast day. One way you know that they're part of the fast day is they're only permitted to do that which is necessary to preserve their health. But anything that's not needed to preserve their health, they would have to do like any other Jew, which means that they are fundamentally part of this fast day. In addition, let's even suppose that somebody is so ill, they have to violate all of the ni'inuyim, and they can't restrict themselves at all. So we have a person who has to eat and drink like regular. There's no way you can delay the eating or minimize the eating, and they have to wash every day because it's necessary for their health, and they have to put on some kind of oils or creams to smooth their body, and they have to wear good shoes, and all the things that they have to do. Even if that's true, he says, Tisha B'Av itself is a day that has an obligation of a certain Torah reading at Shacharit and at Mincha in the morning and in the afternoon. It's not there that once a bunch of people have decided to accept upon themselves the fast, then they get to read the Torah reading for the day. In the case of Tisha B'Av, there's an assigned Torah reading for the day for Shacharit and Mincha. If that's true, then he thinks, that that obligation is a communal obligation. It's not a fast. So since the day is obligated in these Torah readings, then any Jew is also obligated to those Torah readings. In other words, he's assuming that as opposed to a Bet HaBet fast, in a Bet HaBet fast, the Torah reading extends from the practice of the people to have fasted. Whereas in Tisha B'Av, he's arguing, the Torah reading extends from the day itself, as does the practices of fasting, but they're not as linked as they are in Bet HaBet. On Bet HaBet, the only reason to read those Torah readings is that people are fasting. Whereas in Tisha B'Av, he's saying, the Torah reading is an extension of the day, just like the fasting and the other inuyim, the other afflictions, are an extension of the day, the Yoma Kakarim. The day itself causes it, and he says, how would I know? Why do I think that's true? Imagine somebody who's fasting a Tanit Chalob on Shabbat or Yom Tov. So what does that mean, a Tanit Chalob on Shabbat or Yom Tov? So there used to be a tradition, I think it's not observed so often anymore, but there was a time when if people had dreams that they found frightening or upsetting, and they thought the dream predicted some very distressing future, they would fast a fast the next day. You mean somebody woke up from a troubling dream, and a dream that really troubled them. So today, probably for the good and for the bad, people don't take dreams so seriously. So if they had a bad dream, they would say, oh, it's a nightmare. It used to be that people thought the dreams, at least possibly, were predictions of the future, possibly were indicating something. There's actually a great story about that, one of the Rabbi Pesach Kron books, about a shochet, a young shochet, a young slaughterer, a ritual slaughter for a community, who had a dream one night that it was late on a Friday, and he had a long day shechting for people, because people used to bring him all their animals on Friday, or their birds, so he could have fresh meat or fresh chicken for Shabbat. He had a long day, and he was rushing to get to the mikveh before Shabbat, and he was rushing to do his preparations for Shabbat, and his widow comes to him and she says, please help me and shech this chicken for me. I only got it late in the day because the man who catches the chickens had one left over. Nobody had bought it. And it was getting to be Shabbos anyway, so he gave me for a good price. And if you please just shech it for me, please just slaughter the chicken for me, me and my children will be able to have chicken for Shabbos. And he refuses. And she's upset, but he refuses because he's too busy. He's too interested in getting to mikvah, and he's too rushed, and he says, I'm really sorry, I can't do it. And he has this dream in which he dies, and he's in the heavenly court, and they're about to let him go into heaven, and then the Malach HaMavis, and the Satan, the accusing angel, comes and says, look what he did, he was so terrible to this woman, how could you let him into Gan Eden, to heaven, and it's all terrible. The young shochet, the young man, wakes up in a sweat, and he's horrified by the dream. He has no do about it, and he has the dream a few times, and he goes to consult with Rabbanim, and they don't know what to do, because he says, I never did such a thing. I never did anything like that. So they said, well, eventually, they all agree that sometimes dreams are just dreams, and he lets it go. Years later, this is the way the story goes, these are stories, but years later, it's a Friday afternoon. It's been a really long day. There was an extraordinary number of people looking to him to shech their animals. He's very tired, and he's running to mikvah and running to do his Shabbat preparations. And a poor widow comes to him. She's just gotten a chicken for Shabbos. And he turns her down. He refuses. And he says to her, no, I'm really sorry. I can't do it. I just had too long a day. I have my own Shabbos preparation to do. I'm really sorry. I apologize. I can't help you. I'm not helping you. And he goes off, and he goes and he gets ready for Shabbos. And he goes to shul, and he comes back to the house, and he makes Kiddush, and he remembers the dream. And he's horrified. All those years ago, he had this dream, and it warned him, basically. He's now realizing it warned him of this situation. Runs to the widow's house, he begs her forgiveness. He begs her to have her and her children come over to them for the meal. They have meals with them for the Shabbos. He makes sure she has food for Shabbos. And the story is, Motzei Shabbat, he passes away. So I don't know if it's a true story or not, but I think it's a very nice story. I think it's a very pretty story about us remembering lessons we've been taught and how sometimes the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sometimes Hashem sends us messages ahead of time for us to know how to handle situations before they arise to help us get a foot up. In any case, that's not in the Chatam Sofer's Tshuva. I just had a couple of extra minutes today and I really love the story. But it is an idea of a Tadith Chalom. A Tadith Chalom is, let's say somebody woke up with a dream like that and they were horrified and they were very upset about the dream. The halacha is you can fast the next day. And fasting the next day is supposed to be metiv the chalom. It's supposed to help the dream be bettered. It's supposed to help the dream feel better. And there's a prayer you can say to ask Hashem to metiv the chalom, to ask Hashem to turn the dream, because there's a tradition in the Gemara, the dreams are malleable. And the dream that seems like it's a bad dream can actually be a good dream, and vice versa, depending on how we interpret that. So that's a whole thing. That Tanit Chalom was taken so seriously that one was even allowed to do it on Shabbat or Yom Tov. Meaning, normally we're not allowed to fast on Shabbat at all. Normally we don't fast on Yom Tov. But if somebody woke up one Yom Tov morning, had a dream that was so upsetting to them, and they felt that it was necessary for them to fast that day, to be metiv the Chalom, to try their best to make sure the Chalom, the dream, didn't have its negative ramifications, they were allowed to do that. They would have to make up. They would then have to, it's kind of an odd thing, they would have to fast another day to make up for the Yom Tov that they had not kept, you know, for the Shabbat they had not kept. In other words, rather than eating another day, they would have to fast another day. But in any case, that was what the tradition was. So all of that was just background to the Chatam Sofer says. So let's say somebody wakes up Shabbos morning, they wake up Yom Tov morning, and now they're fasting at Tanit Chalom. They're fasting because they had a bad dream, and they're all upset about it. Are you telling me that person can't get an aliyah because he can't be part of the Shabbos Torah reading or the Yom Tov Torah reading because he himself is not eating like everybody else is? So the Chasam Sofer says that doesn't make any sense. The Torah reading for those days is a function of the day and not a function of whether people are eating or drinking. So too, he thinks the reverse is true of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is called a Yom Mo'ed, like a holiday and a day, an appointed day. Sadly for us, it's appointed day for Puranut, for punishment and sadness and bad things happening. But it means that the Torah reading on that day isn't a function of the fasting. It's a function of the Torah reading of that day, like a Shabbos or a Yom Tov. It's a Moed. It's an appointed day. And therefore, he says, even somebody who's not fasting, for whatever reason they're not fasting, and sometimes there are good reasons they're not fasting, nonetheless, they would be able to be part of the Kriyat Hayom, of the reading for the day, because it is an obligation of the day for them as much as for anybody else. And therefore, for those reasons, he thinks that even if you had a whole community of people who weren't fasting, so his example is, let's say they're all not feeling well. An example of that might be, let's say you had a minion in a nursing home or a hospital. So everybody in the hospital, let's say there aren't a lot of visitors. Everybody in the hospital, most of the people at that minyan are ill, so ill their rabbis have told them they're required to eat, so they're eating and drinking that day. There's no fasting going on in this minyan whatsoever. Or the other way around, let's suppose everybody in a minyan, however it is, it's a Tisha B'Av Shenidcha, like this year, when Tisha B'Av was on a Sunday. I'm taping it before Tisha B'Av, but let's say Tisha B'Av was on a Sunday. Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbos and pushed off to Sunday. So when Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbos and pushed off to Sunday, that's called a Nidcha, and there are various leniencies in that Tisha B'Av, one of them being that if somebody's going to be doing a brit for their child that day, for their son that day, they're allowed to eat. So let's suppose you had 10 fathers of babies getting a brit that day, had a minyan together. Chazam Sofer says they would read by Yechalat Mincha. They would read the fast day Torah reading because the fast day Torah reading isn't connected to the act of fasting. It's the day itself that it has the obligation, that it creates the obligation to read this Torah reading. Now for that last one, he actually says he's not sure about that one. That one he thinks he'd want to think about a little bit more. If you had 10 Baalei Brit, if you had 10 people who were having a bris for their children, or they were going to be the Sandik of the bris, they're going to be the Moel at the bris, and therefore they were going to be allowed to eat on the Tisha B'Av Shenidcha, that one he's not so positive about, whether they would read Vayechal. The ill people, he's positive, but not the others. What would the distinction be? He doesn't make it clear, but I think the answer is, I think it's pretty clear, that the reason it is it's different is that the Baalei Brit, they're being allowed to eat because they have a sort of holiday, and their holiday is pushing away, is strong enough to push away the delayed observance of a fast day. But if that's the way you understand it, then the day is changing. And for them, it's a holiday. He gives an example from in the Gemara. There was a group of people called the B'nai Sinav ben Binyamin, the descendants of Sinav ben Binyamin, that their turn to donate wood to the Beit HaMikdash, you need a lot of wood for the fire on the Mizbeach and for other purposes as well, they said that whenever Tisha B'Av would be pushed off to Yud B'Av, to the 10th of Av, that was their day to donate their wood to the Beit HaMikdash, and since it was a day to donate the wood to the Beit HaMikdash, it was for them a sort of a holiday. So in the Gemara, in Bakol Me'arvin, they say, Rav Elazar says the name of Rav Tzadok, that he himself was of this family, and they would never finish a fast day like that. If Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbos and it was pushed off to Sunday, they would begin the fast with everybody else, but they wouldn't fast the whole day. They wouldn't fast the whole day because it was their, it was a holiday for them. And so Rashi there says that if it was a holiday for them, not only didn't they fast the whole day, but they wouldn't read Vayechal in the Torah reading, and they also wouldn't read. Other people had the minhag. The Gemara and Megillah seems to have the minhag to read the Tochacha, to read the Brachot and the Klolot of, I think, in Re'eh on a fast day, but they didn't do any of that. Why didn't they do any of that? Because for them, it was a fast day, and it was a holiday, and it was a yearly holiday, it was an annual holiday, because every 10th of Av was their turn to donate wood to the Beit HaMikdash, to be the ones to provide the wood for the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, it seems like the people who have a Tisha B'Av that's Nidcha, so if their holiday is getting in the way of it, that can really happen. That would be true of Baalei Brit as well. So when it comes to people who have a bris, and they're celebrating it, and that's why they're not fasting, that might be different. But in terms of people who are ill, they have nothing that's uprooting the day. They just have a practical interruption to whether or not they can actually fast, and therefore he thinks that's different. And therefore, he's pretty sure that a chola on Tisha B'Av, who got an aliyah at Mincha, can certainly get an aliyah at Mincha, and certainly take the aliyah, and he doesn't have to worry about it, and Hashem should heal all people who are ill, so they don't have this problem anymore. But these are important distinctions, interesting distinctions about what fast days are inherently fast days. Bahab, he's saying, are not such a thing. The fasting of Bahab is what people do, and therefore for the people who are doing it, it becomes a fast day, but it doesn't change the nature of the day. And therefore the Torah reading that happens on Bahab only happens because of the people who are fasting. But other fast days, such as especially Tisha B'Av, they are essentially a fast day. And the Torah reading on them is an extension of the fact that it's a Torah reading for a fast day. And since an extension of the fact that the Torah reading for a fast day, then even somebody who for some other reason, some extraneous reason, is not fasting, should be able to get that aliyah, with the one possible exception of those for whom it's also a holiday. For people who it's also a holiday, examples would be the people who are donating wood on that day, the Beit HaMikdash, that's a holiday for them. Or people who are going to make a bris that day, that's a holiday for them. At least for a Tisha B'Av that's nidcha, Tisha B'Av that's pushed off till the next day, those would be good enough that their holiday might seem to push aside the experience of the fast day as a fast day, and then they indeed maybe couldn't get an aliyah on that day. And these are some of the thoughts that Chatam Sofer was stimulated to think about from a Tisha B'Av. He wrote it up on the 14th of Av in Tavkuf Ayin Aleph in 1811, and we are, for all that he that year wasn't feeling well and had to break his fast, we are the richer for the ruminations that he had about getting an aliyah at Mincha on that day. And this is a responsible day for the 14th of Av. Have a great day.